Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Woohoo!
Today is November 26th, 2017, and this is episode 148, An Odyssey and News. Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week, we're talking about Nintendo's second or third, their newest 2017 Game of the Year contender, Mario Odyssey, and we'll be catching up on a bevy of news. With all that in mind, let's get started. Slaggy, do you want to kick us off with our usual slate of follow-ups and news bits?
Yeah, so this follow-up basically happened right as we had wrapped up our last episode. We were talking last time about the GameStop Power Pass that would let you pay $60 and rent pre-owned games for 6 months and then keep one at the end of the
six-month period.
That has been put on pause. So if you already had put the money towards it, they allowed you to get a refund.
Yeah, you got a refund and a free pre-owned game in exchange.
I'd be like, are they still charging like $60 for Metroid Prime or whatever? Like, I'd be like, I'm gonna get like the most expensive free game. But
you would. This is why we can't have nice things.
Yeah, but they have not given any reason, so sorry about it if you were looking forward to that.
Yeah, you know, I've seen a lot of speculation, apparently there's a lot of speculation that maybe some of the publishers were not super on board with this, that maybe GameStop themselves was looking at the numbers, because there was a pilot program this past summer in certain regions doing like a summer pass that was very similar to this, and so there's a lot of people thinking maybe upon reviewing the data from that, this just didn't make as much sense as they thought.
Well, I initially heard rumors that the systems for like the power up rewards or something weren't working correctly, but then, you know, I never heard any official thing about that. So,
well, that was actually the initial word that came out of GameStop, but again,
okay,
you know,
that's what I
thought. A lot of store managers were like, hey, we ran pilot programs for this summer with the summer pass, so how could the tech work for that and not for this? Yeah, there's definitely some obfuscation going on here.
GameStop, gasp. We also have news about Romancing Saga 2's English version.
What?
Specifically for PS Vita.
What?
Creator Akitoshi Kawazu-san tweeted that not only is it still going to be on Vita,
for its Western release,
as well as some other game consoles.
Oh, and he had a really cute little typo in his tweet about it.
Oh, consoles.
Oh, buddy. Either way, he suggests that we please await official announcement from Square Enix, and thank you, everybody.
And that's this December. That's like in a few, well, not necessarily in a few days, but you know.
No, by the time people hear this episode, December will be like 2 days away.
What I mean is that we don't necessarily know that Saga is going to be like the first day of December.
You're talking about the specific release. I thought you were talking about December itself, because yeah, December itself is just a few days away.
But what I'm saying is that this game is going to be out soon, apparently.
We also have a very brief follow-up about word that we discussed last episode, where Square Enix had talked about, you know, their intentions to be more proactive with Switch development, particularly regarding mid-sized titles. This was, of course, from the Game Joho posts over on GamesTalk.net, and something really interesting, you know, basically was from the Q&A section of the financial results briefing, really just following up on what we had talked about last time, where they really note, you know, that in particular, the Nintendo Switch makes it easier for them to leverage their back catalog of assets and expertise. So that really tells me, you know, that they are looking at how they can make games primarily targeted at Switch, particularly, I would think, using like some last-gen assets. I mean, they kind of say it right there. This makes me want a like Final Fantasy XII sequel, like XII-2 or something.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I just love Final Fantasy XII. What are your thoughts on this slide?
There was a Final Fantasy XII sequel, but we're not going to
talk about Revenant
that.
Wings. It's not a thing that happened. I refuse to believe.
I mean, I think that, you know, they're recognizing that, you know, people are buying Switch and that they would like to play, you know, some of these maybe less popular Square Enix, or, you know, a little bit more, which haven't gotten as much attention than, you know, their core series. So I think that's a good sign for everyone.
So you're telling me Einhander 2, Tobal number 3.
Yeah, I think we made those.
A new Brave Fencer Musashiden game.
I think we made those jokes last time.
Shut up. We also have word here that DX2 Shin Megami Tensei Liberation will be getting a worldwide release. This is, of course, something that many of us were hopeful for, but it is nice to have it officially confirmed. We also have word that the game will have some really cute AR functionalities.
Yeah, I love this Jack Frost about to go down a slide.
Yeah, I love that. We don't have a whole lot more information at this point, but this game is actually expected to release this year in Japan for iOS and Android, so I expect we'll have more to talk about soon enough.
Yeah. Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite is going to be getting 3 new characters on its roster. Black Widow, Venom, and Winter Soldier.
Oh, excellent.
So that's on December 5th. That's about it for that.
Yeah, I'm actually really excited about this. You know, as a game, I think that Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite actually turned out pretty well. It is obviously somewhat ugly. I'm still hoping for in 6 months, we're going to get, a visual update patch, like what we saw happen with King of Fighters.
Oh, yeah.
Year.
And that actually made that game look a lot better.
Yeah, and I actually think that if that happened for MVCI, that the community at large, if they would give it a second chance, would actually be pretty happy with what they see. I'm really excited about these new characters. Black Widow looks sort of like a more aggressive Spider-Man type player. She's super agile, which is really cool. Venom plays very similar to old MVC Venom, but with a bit more maneuverability as well. And Winter Soldier actually seemed to play very similar to how Chris Redfield used to play, but with actually heavier hits, if you could believe that. So definitely very excited to see how these players interact with the rest of the cast. The previous DLC characters, of course, turned out pretty well, so very excited to see this roster expand.
Yeah. In other fighting game news, we have word that Noctis is going to be a new DLC character for Tekken 7. This is, of course, the hero from Final Fantasy 15. So this will be next spring. There was a really cute reveal trailer for it. I mean, these Tekken 7 trailers have been kind of, really fun to watch, though. Yeah, so Noctis is going to be coming next spring.
Exciting. It's so funny that now Noctis and Cloud have guested in other fighting games, and we still haven't seen Lightning in anything. It'll kind of make it funny if it turns out that Square Enix really had been pushing for Lightning to be in that PlayStation Battle All-Stars Royale or whatever. Like, oops, y'all blew it.
Aw.
We also have word here that Gotenks, Kid Buu, and Adult Gohan will be playable characters in the upcoming Dragon Ball FighterZ, or FighterZ. I just want to call it FighterZ because it's funnier that way.
Yeah.
Either way, excited about these additions. Obviously, these are going to be some fun characters to play as. And this game, the release is rapidly approaching. January 26th for the North American and European release, that's literally 2 months today.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, right? So we'll be playing it before you know it.
We have a new ARMS fighter in the version 4.0 update. This is Misango.
Oh, excellent. This character looks really cool. I'm super into this whole aesthetic, which seems almost like Mayan influenced.
Yeah.
Super into it.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's nice to see that ARMS has been getting a lot of support and
and free at that.
Yeah, I mean, I know one of the complaints upon a release is that it was a little bit anemic in terms of its content, so it looks like it's, starting to shape up. I didn't actually buy the game after the global test punch, but maybe it's time to get around to that now.
Excellent. And, we were talking about King of Fighters 14 a minute ago because of the graphics update that it had. We do have a King of Fighters update here to discuss. This is an announcement of a new DLC character and stage. This was actually a fan-made character made by Saudi Arabian artist Michelle Al-Barak. They designed a character named Najd and was actually won a contest that SNK was holding to have a fan character made into a playable character in one of their games. This person won. The character looks really, really, really badass. She's like a strong woman in all black with almost like a Bayonetta style, which I'm super into.
Yes.
And we also are getting a new stage. It's going to come with that fighter, Najd. This is called Masmak Fort Arena. And the stage concept design was actually done by a different winner of the contest. This was Zainab Al-Lawati from Oman. So congratulations, artists, and I can't wait to see your work in the upcoming DLC that will be available for PS4, cool. PC, and arcades.
Yeah, that's super cool. We have news that Pokemon Bank is now able to support Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon.
That's
awesome.
This is
with the version 1.4 update. So,
and that also added support for Pokemon Gold and Silver.
Oh, that's right, for the 3DS Virtual Console. So,
exactly.
Now you can pretty much bring all your Pokemons up to Ultra Sun and Moon if you'd like, which I know a lot of people are doing.
Yeah, I think for a lot of us, Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon is like, this is fun, but I also want to rush through it so I can get to the new stuff.
Yeah.
And this gives you a good way to do that. We also have a very lightest of leaks. This one is word that at the upcoming PlayStation Experience 2017, which will be taking place December 9th and 10th, there will be playable titles including Dragon's Crown Pro and DJ Max Respect.
Mm.
As neither of these games were announced for a Western release, this is our first word that both of these games are going to be coming out here, which
that's
obviously
awesome.
Exciting stuff. We also have word that SNK has actually made a great deal of money this year. This is actually a really cool thing, you know. We've talked in the past about how SNK was changing their focus. You know, they had had several years, in fact, where the patchy slot business was no longer making money for them. They were withdrawing from that field. They were going to be focusing back on video games. And, you know, actually they went from last year, where they were 558 million yen in the red, to having a net profit of 3.105 billion yen.
Wow.
So that's, in terms of U.S. dollars, millions of dollars more. So that's, tens of millions of dollars of profit. So that's a very good thing for someone who was previously in the red. I'm super stoked about this. Love SNK and very happy to hear that things are going well.
Yeah, good for them. And we have an official title for Arika EX. It will now be called Fighting EX Lair. And it is going to have a beta starting on December 11th.
Excellent. And wrapping up our follow-ups, we have word here of a tease of a new Box Boy game.
Ooh.
Yeah, so at the end of a new video that was uploaded to the official channel for the series, we have a tease of To Be Continued coming after Sayonara Box Boy. So, in the February issue of Famitsu, the series director, Yasuhiro Mukae-san, declared that he was interested in bringing the series to Switch, but had noted that he could not confirm anything at that time. I'm very, very excited now. We're seeing this. Obviously, we all know we're going to get a Nintendo Direct detailing the 2018 plan in the next month or two. I'm hoping that there's some confluence here and that we are going to hear more about Box Boy coming soon.
Oh, that's super exciting.
Indeed. All right, well, with all that having been said, we do have some release info updates. Finding Paradise, the sequel to the Moon, will be releasing on December 14th. Which is actually pretty soon. That will be releasing on PC. We also have word here that Puzzle Fighter for iOS and Android has launched worldwide this week. I have put some time into it already, but I'll talk about that later on today. We have word that Galgun 2 will be releasing in Japan on PS4 and Nintendo Switch on March 15th. Although the Galgun games have typically come out in the West, which is not a sentence I would ever have expected to say,
right.
We should note that the PS4 and the Switch are both region-free, so if you want to get your heart gun panty shooting done sooner, you have that option.
All right.
Dynasty Warriors 9 will be releasing in North America on February 13th, just in time for Valentine's Day. That will be on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC. We have Trails of Cold Steel Kai releasing on the PS4 in Japan on March 8th, and it will feature 60 frames a second and 4K display support for people who have the PS4 Pro. And last but definitely not least, we will have Phantom Breaker Battlegrounds Overdrive releasing on the Switch via the eShop on December 7th worldwide. This is, of course, the beat-em-up game in the Phantom Breaker series. All of the cute Phantom Breaker SD characters you've come to know and love in a almost like a River City Ransom style gameplay.
Aww.
Definitely something I will be getting and hopefully playing with four friends on my birthday. Unless we have anything else, we have some quick news, I think.
All right, I guess it's time for
news.
Oh my god, news.
Oh my god.
So starting out, we have a new Square Enix Final Fantasy smartphone game. They're
what?
Just never gonna stop. This is based on the World of Final Fantasy series. It is called World of Final Fantasy Melly Mellow. It involves a world called Valgalon, where tiny people known as Lilikins coexist with legendary beings known as Mirages.
So that is already the setting of World of Final Fantasy, which I'm going to assume you haven't played.
I did not get around to it.
So the thing is, World of Final Fantasy was actually really good.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
So I'm stoked about this, because again, you know, I actually liked World of Final Fantasy a lot, and we've already actually gotten a trailer for this game that includes guest characters Cloud, Zack, Cecil, Tidus, Lightning, Garnet, Balthier, Terra from Six. So I'm super excited for this game, and I kind of really, really, really need it to come out in English, Westward. I'm still mad that we didn't get that Omni Opera Dissidia spinoff, so I need this, Square. Don't do this to me again.
Yeah, it seems like it'll be interesting, so we'll have to see if it comes out over here.
Fingers crossed. We also have word here that there's going to be a new reveal in the Super Robot Wars series on December 11th in Japan. This is going to be streamed in Japanese Standard Time from 9 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. It'll be on Nico Nico Douga and YouTube. According to the Korean Bandai Namco blog, the new information will begin broadcasting at 10 o'clock. And this has been tweeted about by the Bandai Namco Southeast Asia Twitter as well. So it's very likely that there will be an Asia release version of whatever game is announced. Fingers crossed that that means we will also get English options in the Asian release. Very similar to what we saw with the recent Super Robot Wars V.
Oh. Sega has a new RPG for mobiles coming in 2018 called Wonder Gravity, the Pino and the Gravity User. It takes place in a world without land or ocean. And there are a small-sized race of beings born from the stars called Pino. And by eating their fruit, humans are able to become gravity users. Something kind of notable is that the story was written by Yasuko Kobayashi-san, and he has written for such TV shows as Samurai Sentai Shinkenger and Kamen Rider Deno. So
it's Shinkenger, and okay, that was Power Rangers Samurai.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and I can never tell because it should.
Yeah,
it
no,
should be.
You're absolutely right. On this one, you're absolutely right. It does defy typical Japanese pronunciation conventions. You're not wrong.
So that was a pretty big Sentai.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. This is super exciting. You know, in the original tease leading up to this announcement, a lot of us were hoping, because there was like a countdown, it had, you know, RPG and like clouds and stuff. A lot of us were hoping for a Skies of Arcadia revival.
Yeah.
So when this announcement came, a lot of us were like, oh, dude. But then those of us in the Toku fandom, once Kobayashi-san's name came up, it was like, okay, but actually, this is probably going to be super good.
Yeah.
At least the story will be. We also got the announcement coming out of Sega of a new Valkyria Chronicles game. This is Valkyria Chronicles 4, and it has been announced for the PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and Nintendo Switch. It will be releasing worldwide in 2018, and it will be releasing specifically in Japan on March 21st. Obviously, that is coming very quickly.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, you know, super exciting. According to the most recent Famitsu, the game is actually already 90% complete. So
wow.
They, you know, Sega really sat on their laurels on this announcement, pulled almost a Nintendo style, like, hey, this game's coming out and you'll be playing it in a few months. Hopefully it works out for them. They're basically they've said that their goal is to take Valkyria Chronicles back to its roots of the first game, get away from the quirkiness of the second and third and the fan service of the Azure Blue or whatever that one was that we all bought but no one played.
I didn't buy it.
Well, you made the right call, because yeah, I had it pre-ordered. Blue Revolution or something, I think it was called here. Either way, it was super fan servicey and not as good, and it was sad.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, I honestly played it for like an hour and I was like, this is lacking something and I don't have time for all this. So last but definitely not least, we have word of an upcoming new mobile RPG based on the Marvel property. This is Marvel Strike Force. It's being developed by Fox Next Games and Marvel Entertainment. It is very specifically going to be an RPG that is focused on collecting heroes and villains from the comic books and presumably movies. A lot of people...
X-Men. Or no Fantastic Four.
Probably. But a lot of people are assuming that this is going to be filling the RPG hole that the cancellation of the two Avengers Alliance games has left in many people's hearts. Huh. Any thoughts, Slaggy?
I just don't really have a lot of time in my life for mobile games. Not like actually literally time, just like I just kind of don't care.
You have reclaimed your time from mobile games.
I'm reclaiming my time.
So I assume that's why you're not playing the recently released Animal Crossing Pocket Camp.
I mean, it's not that I'm not playing it. It's just with the holidays going on right now, it just really has not been my priority.
So this was my segue into Culture Club, which is, of course, our segment where we talk about some gaming news stories that maybe aren't specifically about the games themselves, but do influence and impact those of us who play the games. So this first one, of course, as you probably just got from that intro, is word that Nintendo made a lot of money on the first day of its early release of Animal Crossing Pocket Camp. Animal Crossing Pocket Camp, you know, it's been teased and teased and teased for the last, like, year plus. And Nintendo announced its release and then ended up releasing it a day early in many regions. And on its first day of release, it shot to the number one category in the downloaded app in the several of the stores worldwide of the app stores. And including in Japan, it is in the top 10 in the highest grossing category of the app store. So this is kind of a big deal, you know. This game was kind of always expected to make a lot of money, but I don't think anyone expected to see it zoom up on day one. Will be very interesting to see the 7-day numbers, the 30-day numbers, and then eventually the 6-month and 1-year numbers. But it already looks like Nintendo may have another Fire Emblem Heroes on its hands. Yeah. Now, Saggy, you were saying about the game itself, you're a big Animal Crossing fan. It kind of sounds like this one hasn't quite caught you the way the real, quote-unquote, real games in the series have.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of, you know, very Facebook gamey, very Farmville. And I mean, arguably, some people would argue that regular Animal Crossing is, and like, oh, you know, you have to come back the next day or in a couple hours to get more fruit from the trees anyways, but I don't know. It's, for me, it's different. Like, I guess that's part of it's a bigger thing about I just still don't really view my phone as a gaming device. It's hard for me to really stay engaged with any sort of mobile social gaming. But I mean, from what I have played, it seems really well done. It's really cute. I'm enjoying seeing people having fun with it.
Yeah, I will note, you know, I mean, I give you a hard time, but I do get it. For me, I have a lot easier time doing mobile games that I can just pick up and play for literally a minute or two. Something like Pocket Fighter has actually worked really well for me because it's, you know, I'll pull my phone out, I'll play a match or two, and then put it away, and I'm done for the day, and that's fine.
Don't you mean a match three?
You nerd. Puzzle Fighter doesn't even require three, so...
Okay, that's true. I was trying to make a joke.
I mean, I appreciated the effort, but it didn't work. Also, who's the bigger nerd here? You for making that joke or me for correcting you on it?
You.
Probably. So, yeah, I haven't played Animal Crossing Pocket Camp yet. I did download it, like, immediately. I was super excited to start it, and then I got busy, super busy at work, and now I just haven't gotten around to it. I've been super busy this holiday weekend, so...
Yeah.
I am excited to check it out, though, on my train commute in the coming days, so we'll see how that goes.
Excellent.
We also have word.
Yeah, this is unfortunate.
Well, so we have word that Final Fantasy VII's short stories collection...
Wait, I thought you were talking about the other one.
...will
Oops.
Be published in the West by Yen Press.
I guess, but it is kind of unfortunate because it's Final Fantasy VII news. No, I'm kidding.
So these
I
were
got
the,
my tabs mixed up. Sorry.
These were the sequence of short stories that were written to take place between Final Fantasy VII and Advent Children. They've been available in Japan for actually a really long time. They were mostly, I believe, written by... Kazushige Nomura-san, different Nomura-san, I think, than most of you are familiar with. But, you know, some of these have actually been adapted, like, to anime OVAs, like The Case of Denzel, which was adapted to the anime On the Way to a Smile episode Denzel.
Yeah, I was wondering where I had recognized that On the Way to a Smile title.
Yeah, so definitely some exciting stuff here. You know, the limited edition box set of Advent Children did actually get a pamphlet featuring the Case of Barrett story, but we'll now also be getting Case of Yuffie, Case of Nanaki, Case of Shinra, and Case of the Lifestream. All in one book.
Yeah.
And we don't yet know what the pricing or date release for the story collection is going to be, but we will keep you posted. I think a lot of our listeners who love Final Fantasy VII will be stoked to read these stories.
Yeah, and I mean, I liked Advent Children Complete quite a bit. Like, it actually made me appreciate the entire franchise of Final Fantasy VII a lot more than I had. So, I mean, this is really cool that they're expanding the world and connecting the dots in some ways, because, you know, clearly a lot of people are really passionate about this game.
I choose to believe that someday we will all agree to reevaluate Dirge of Cerberus.
Why?
We also have news that Fantasy Star Online 2's English website is now down.
More disappointment for PSO2 fans.
Yeah. So, basically, the PSO site in English has, actually, the website's been up since early 2013 and was still up as recently as this summer. But it now shows a DNS address could not be found error. A lot of people had been holding out hope that we would be getting a release of Phantasy Star Online 2 officially in English, but it appears the dream is finally dead.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they just don't want to do it.
I have dreamed a dream, and now that dream is gone for
me. I mean,
I
know people are still like, oh, well, PSO2 Cloud is going to be coming to the Switch in Japan. Maybe this is the time. Poor PSO2 fans.
If you really want to play it, though, there is a really fantastic fan translation. It is super easy to get in on, and it's kind of fun. But, yeah, this sucks. It just really sucks. And plus, PSO is such a great game that would, I think, be really suited to the modern marketplace. Like, if nothing else, how about we get a PSO1 release on Switch? Like, that would be really sweet.
I guess people can dream.
I will continue dreaming. All right, so we do have a smash hit this week. Slaggy, do you want to talk about this a little bit?
Yeah, this one is over on Kopeet, which is a child of Deadspin and Kotaku, and this is called British Soccer Writer is Baffled by the Prospect of Gamers Humping. This was done by Gita Jackson, who's,
yes,
you know, done some really excellent content for Kotaku since joining up with them. And so basically, this is a response to an article from British GQ called "Are Esports Going to Replace the Beautiful Game?" And is kind of like lamenting that, like, with the rise of esports, that, like, what's happening to the lads who want to enjoy football, blah, blah, blah.
Or soccer, as you may know it.
Yeah, right. So, and basically, you know, it's whatever. But then he says some of the athletes about esports, some of the athletes even look like they've had consensual sex. And so, you know, the thing that's great about this article is it's just kind of like, why are we still, why do gamers still have, or not why do gamers, but why...
Why does the public at large still have this weird preconceived notion of gamers as troglodytes with lacking in social skills?
Well, I guess because some of them do.
Well, yeah, but that's true of literally any subgroup
of people. That's true, but...
Any base of people, when you collect enough of them, are going to have people like that.
Yeah, so it's just a... it's a short article, but it's a good look at, you know, like, WTF, and, you know, she talks about how, like, how she and her friends in high school would make fun of the band kids, but they were actually, to borrow a term from Mean Girls, sexually active band geeks.
All right, well, let's move on then. You know, again, we're always a big fan of these kinds of articles that question the status quo, that call out, like, these kinds of, like, really, I just want, like, damaging stereotypes. Like, we're into that. So, good on you, Gita. This was awesome. And good on you, Kotaku and Deadspin. I like the Compete sub zine.
Yeah.
I like that those columns a lot, yeah. The columns published under that. So we are now going to start our discussion, but before we talk about Mario Odyssey, we have three news stories here I want to deeper dive a little bit. The first one is word that Gazillion, the studio behind the game Marvel Heroes, kind of surprised shut down the game on Friday. You know, Disney had announced that they were ending their relationship with Gazillion two weeks ago.
I thought it was on Wednesday.
Well, so Disney announced that they were going to be disconnecting from Gazillion back in mid-November, so on the 15th specifically. And at the time, they said that the game was going to continue running through the end of the year. And the Marvel Heroes team announced specifically that the servers would shut down on December 31st and that they were immediately removing the ability for players to spend real money in the game. This was, you know, considered like it sucks, but at least, you know, we're getting more than a month advance notice. We're getting communication. Basically, though, multiple former employees of Gazillion started popping up on Twitter on Wednesday to announce that they had been laid off that day. They were not being paid out their severance or any PTO.
Yeah, see, that's why I had
they were
Wednesday
not being
mind.
Paid severance. Their medical insurance is going to last to the end of the month, as is typical, and no further. This is obviously terrible.
Yeah.
Of course, basically,
Happy
Gazillion,
Thanksgiving.
Yeah, right? And this is, you know, a lot of people I've seen saying, you know, fuck Disney, fuck Marvel. This actually really doesn't have a great deal to do with this choice in particular.
It's Gazillion,
absolutely. Disney did decide to no longer work with Gazillion on Marvel Heroes, as is their want and right to do. And Gazillion are the ones that apparently did not have a backup plan to properly take care of their employees. And these things are never made on a whim. Like, these decisions don't just happen. It's very hard to believe that the top heads at Gazillion didn't know this wasn't coming for at least the last several months. So it's just really, really sad. And even sadder is, also sad is word, you know, that Marvel Heroes Omega, which is the Xbox and PlayStation versions of the game, have only been online and playable for like 5.5 months. So people who have been putting their money into this game, including those ridiculous, you know, $250 packages of buy the game and all characters in the game, are, you know, completely SOL on their money. So it's just really, really disappointing that Gazillion is really throwing so many people under the bus in so many different ways on this one. It's just really, really sad. Slaggy, do you have any thoughts?
No, it's just, right before a holiday especially, that's just heartbreaking.
Well, right? What a shitty way to go into your Thanksgiving and into the holiday season at large. Just really disappointing. And the crown on the cake of really just shitty stories about studios closing. This has been a really rough year. We also have pretty big news in the gaming world about loot boxes. And Slaggy, I'd like you to take this one and sort of explain what's going on here.
Yeah, so there has been a big hubbub about Battlefront 2. I get all the Star Wars ones mixed up. But
that is correct.
This one was Battlefront 2. A lot of controversy about how they use loot boxes. And so a lot of people have been, like, you know, very pissed about this, and a state representative for Hawaii, Chris Lee, spoke out on YouTube and said that basically this is similar to gambling in casinos, and has proposed that there be laws to limit their use. So basically, we've also heard the same from Belgium. Their gaming commission is going to be investigating this, and the gambling commission in UK as well. So, you know, a lot of people in various government capacities are going to be starting to take a closer look at this. I just think it's fascinating because, you know, we've heard stories for years about, like, you know, boy spends £1,000 from his mom's banking account on Farmville. You know, so, like, just microtransactions in general have always been kind of a controversial thing, but especially with, like, loot boxes now being such a common mechanism for, you know, getting money for games.
And I will say, you know, I've actually myself recently had a little bit of a change of heart on this topic. I've always been pro microtransactions, and I still am to the degree that I think that it's very viable to have costumes available for sale,
oh, yeah,
or heroes available for sale in games where that makes sense. Like the model that League of Legends used to use. I guess they do actually have a randomized element now, but you know, the League of Legends or the Heroes of the Storm model, where you can use in-game currency or real-world money to buy characters, and otherwise they're on a free rotating
right
system. I think that's a very fair way to open up an additional revenue stream.
Or even things like, you know, costumes.
Oh, absolutely. Costumes, aesthetic upgrades. I still find that to be a very fair way to open up additional revenue.
Which, like, the Overwatch model, so, basically.
Well, but Overwatch is a little different because, you know, there, while you do get loot boxes at level up, and you do level up pretty often.
That's true, but sometimes it's like, oh, I just got four sprays.
Yeah, and they do sell the loot boxes. And I'm sort of, in reading about this and learning more about why some of these governmental agencies are looking into loot boxes and the mechanisms behind them, and really reading about the more predatory functions that are sort of running underneath these design choices, because they really do take advantage of people with a certain mindset or a certain predereliction toward unhealthy spending regarding gambling,
and
people who really get hooked there and end up, you know, compulsed to spend. I guess I really have sort of changed my opinion on this one. I think that it is predatory, and it does negatively impact game design to, again, design your game in an unhealthy way to take advantage of those kinds of things. I will say, in my opinion, something like Overwatch is significantly
less damaging
than something like Battlefront 2.
Yeah.
Where Battlefront 2 is very specifically like, you can only get these rewards randomly. You can get them through playing, but it's not easy and it's not fast. Or you can just spend some money, but you may have to spend a lot of money because it's completely randomized and you have no say over whether you're going to get the right picks for your characters. And that, to me, is significantly more damaging than something like Overwatch, where it is at least all aesthetic.
And then
the actual core gameplay and game design in Overwatch is always going to be the same. You're always going to have an equal, you know, balanced situation. But, you know, you do get coins to buy costumes as you get duplicates from your loot boxes, but you don't earn them from playing the game itself. And that, to me, is a little bit of a differentiating factor as well.
Yeah.
But it's just really messy. But I am actually really glad that people are coming in to step in on this, because, like I said, you know, I do think there is a fair way to do microtransactions. As we've discussed on this show, you know, budgets for video games are skyrocketing all the time, and there's no real reason to assume that that's going to change anytime soon. A lot of these studios do need these additional revenue streams. I think microtransactions are a valid one, but I think it's really important that they be done in a way that is not predatory, that does not actively harm the people playing these games. And now that it's clear that that is what's happening, it's actually been really sickening to really look at and take a step back, like, fuck that. Battlefront 2 in particular is a game I was fully planning on playing, loot crates and all, until, again, like I said, I really started to look at how these things are designed to prey on people. And I'm actually really happy to say now I have passed on Battlefront 2.
Mm-hmm.
I got an Xbox One X, and I very specifically want to play Battlefront 2 on it, but not like this. I will pass. I'll wait until it is dirt cheap. I can get it used or something, but I am not going to support this kind of game design. Over it.
Yep.
This last one, which is kind of fun, we have word that Nintendo is working on an animated Mario movie with the studio behind Minions.
Yep, Illumination Entertainment.
Now, this is super exciting. It was reported by the Wall Street Journal. It is being taken as almost like a confirmed fact at this point, though it needs to be noted, Nintendo of America has told Kotaku that they have nothing to announce on this topic.
But that's kind of Nintendo's line when they're not ready to announce things.
That is correct. You know, you may recall Kimishima-san had told Japanese newspaper Asahi Shimbun last year that the company was in talks to create movies based on its characters.
Mm-hmm.
So the pieces are in place for this to be true. And I guess why I wanted to deeper dive this a little bit, Slaggy, I know that you, like myself, were surprised by how decent the Minions movie was.
Right.
The Despicable Me movies tend to be a good time. What do you think about Illumination Entertainment as the studio behind a Mario movie?
I believe, oh no, that was Blue Sky that did the Peanuts movie, and apparently that one was really faithful to the franchise, but I don't know, like, because Illumination also has had a couple of duds, as far as I'm aware, so, I mean, but I guess that's true for any animation studio. My thing is that at this point, I feel like Nintendo would not approve a product and not, like, just say, oh yeah, you can have full creative reign. I mean,
yeah, the Nintendo of today is not the Nintendo that let the live-action Mario Brothers movie happen.
Right, so, I mean, I have faith that Nintendo would have a large degree of involvement and, like, kind of like final story approval or whatever, you know, so I'm really optimistic for it, and, you know, it makes sense, because, you know, we do know for a fact that the Universal stuff is moving forward, like, we know that we know specifics about, like, where in Universal Florida that, like, which lands it's going to replace or whatever, you know, so...
they've actually made the proposals and everything. It's all public, and it's happening.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think it makes sense that Universal has involvement in this, and it just, like I said, I can't speak for all the Illumination films, but, you know, I think it probably seems like a good partner. DreamWorks doesn't seem like it would really make sense. Disney just, I mean, I don't see Disney, like, with Universal and Disney, you know, theme parks being kind of, you know, competitors, that wouldn't have worked. I mean, I can't really judge it until we see a first look at it, but if it actually does happen, I will be really excited for it.
Excellent. All right. Well, all that having been said, let's dive into some other Mario discussion, and this is our discussion on Mario Odyssey. We are, I will note, probably not going to talk about this game in quite as much depth as we normally would, and a big part of the why for that is that, to me, one of the biggest things about Mario Odyssey is how many times it delightfully surprised me.
Right.
So I don't really want to dig so deep that we spoil all of the surprises. I just want to talk a little bit about how we, as long-term, lifelong Mario fans, approached the game, how we responded to the game, now that I believe we've both finished it. That's correct?
Right. I mean, finished in terms of main story, not 100% complete.
So now that we are both looking back on it, sort of how we have received it. So, you know, Mario Odyssey, obviously Nintendo Switch exclusive to this point, worldwide release October 27th, 2017. And to talk a little bit about the game's development, it actually began development shortly after Super Mario 3D World was released in late 2013 by much the same development team. Directed by Kenta Motokura-san, the actual focus of the game was to experiment to find fun concepts based on the theme of surprise. So, you know, they actually were very focused on, like, motion controls during the development of the game, particularly that they had actually felt that it was, like, really fun just to do, like, the throw motion with the Joy-Con.
Which is so funny, because
That's exactly what I was going to ask you, Slaggy.
I did not play with motion controls at all, even though I've heard that it, like, kind of enhances it. But...
Yeah, well, exact same here. But apparently their initial brainstorming actually resulted in, like, a lot of different little mini prototypes of game ideas, which is actually what led to the creation of all of the different sandbox environments. And, you know, that's something that I think a lot of people have really noted, is as opposed to something like Mario 64, you have a larger hub world, you go into the individual levels. With Mario Odyssey, it's almost like the hub itself is the world, and then you're going into little individual mini challenges within that gigantic hub, which, again, feels a little bit more open world. I've heard the game referred to as, like, an open world take on Mario. I'd like to ask you, Slaggy, how do you feel about that? The idea of the sandbox as an analog or stand-in for open world?
You mean specifically compared to 64 and...
Compared to 64.
Sunshine,
compared
Galaxy,
to Sunshine,
Galaxy
compared to Galaxy, yeah.
I mean, for me, it really clicked in a way because, you know, I could... For example, there were some moons that were really easy to find in... that you're like, oh, yeah, all I need to do is jump up there. There were other, you know, there were definitely the story-driven moons that, you know, kind of were kind of focusing you on moving forward. But then there were also the ones where you would just be running around, like, you know, whatever kingdom, and then you're like, oh, I can see a moon. Or something like, you know, like, oh, I don't even know if there's a moon here, but it looks like there's some sort of challenge here. And so kind of, like, I really appreciated the way, especially with each kingdom really kind of having its own special little creatures or enemies that you could capture, and how that would, you know, affect, you know, so whether it's the bullet bills or the ones from the wooded kingdom where you, like, were the little plant that can grow tall. Like, I thought it was really...
That totally made me think of becoming a Deku scrub, by the way.
Right? Seriously. And then in the snow kingdom when you're basically doing Goron racing. But, like, I really appreciated that, you know, it encouraged you to look at the kingdom and kind of be like, okay, well, how can I get to that place? Or, you know, even in some smaller ones, like the one with the purple swampy water, it's like, okay, well, how am I going to get to that one? There's like one power moon that was on a tree or something, and I was like, okay, well, I can use the little pterodactyl guy buddy to get there, and, like, it took me still a couple tries. So, like, I guess what I'm saying is that, you know, instead of being like, oh, well, I'm stuck on trying to do the penguin slide, you know, in Mario 64, or, you know, whatever various challenge you're trying to do in, you know, one of those prior Mario games, it's kind of like, oh, well, you know, this Power Moon is really frustrating me. Like, oh, the timed ones where you have to throw it on the little almost scarecrow guy, and then,
I,
like,
think they are literally scarecrows, yeah.
Like, there were some of those where I'm like, oh, well, I need a couple more Power Moons to power the Odyssey back up. And
let's say, assuming you're listening to this, keep your thought in mind, Slaggy. Assuming you're listening to this, you haven't played Mario Odyssey yet. What we're talking about right now is there are some timed challenges where you do the Mario hat throw onto a scarecrow, and then you have, typically about 30 seconds to get through, like, a little obstacle course that pops up temporarily, get a Power Moon at the end, and then the obstacle course disappears.
Yeah.
Back to your point.
So, like, you know, some of those were like, you know, for example, there were a couple of those that I was like, oh, I just can't get this, but there's always another Power Moon nearby. It's like a, you know, that kind of almost lets you choose what types of Mario platforming obstacles you want to focus on, almost.
Oh, and this is something that I actually got into a little light argument on Twitter, and I say a light argument, I really just mean a good-natured discussion. Someone that I follow was talking about how the game should have just had fewer Power Moons because, you know, it takes away the point of the game if you're going to get a Power Moon for ground pounding in an open field that has a sparkly bit there, and, like, there's no challenge, and the game just feels like a constant dopamine drip. My perspective on that, very similar to your, Slaggy, was that I had felt like having all of these varied paths and so many options of what I can do at any given time really, for me, made the journey feel a lot less linear, because it felt like I was really guiding how my progression went. For me, you know, I was super focused, and Slaggy, you watched me play through some of the game. I was really focused on, like, 100%ing every area I found, really focused on, like, exploring every nook and cranny. Some worlds, you know, I would get the 3 power moons or 4 power moons or whatever, but I wouldn't leave until I had gotten, like, 50 power moons.
Right.
And for me, that was actually really fun, and I appreciated the freedom to do that. And especially on the flip side, although this isn't my experience, I appreciate that freedom by having some of the super easy ones, having these easier ones to get, would allow someone who doesn't play like me, someone who is maybe a kid and this is their first Mario game ever, or a mom, this is their first 3D game ever, having those easier to get Power Moons would be, for them, I think, really important in allowing them a path of progression to get through, to learn the basics. I can move Mario in 3 dimensions really well. I can do crazy hat jumps and bounce off the hat and throw another hat and dive on it. I mean, I can do some crazy tricks. The average player who might be approaching this game or this kind of game for the first time isn't going to be able to do that. And to me, this almost creates like a set your own difficulty,
right,
by really
exactly
setting the bar for what you want to aim for. And it's like, yeah, I guess I just wanted to hear your take on that.
No, that's exactly what I was going to say, is that, you know, one of the things that I feel that, especially in the Mario series of late, that Nintendo has done really well is allow for varying levels of difficulty, whether that's, you know, bubbling in the
new Mario Brothers series.
Mario Brothers, or even, you know, you can bubble in 3D World as well. you know, I would argue that maybe like the Zelda's, although I mean, with the Zelda, with Breath of the Wild, they even kind of moved in that direction too. Of, you know, I don't, if I didn't want to do the shrines that were too tricky, I didn't need to get that in order to, you know, complete the game. But I think that this really just takes it a step further. Like I said, like I was focused on, you know, I really wanted to see how the story progressed because I was really enjoying it. I thought the story was really cute. And so I wasn't as focused on getting every power moon before I moved on. I was like, okay, you know, I want to get the amount I need to power the Odyssey back up and then, you know, move on.
Yeah, so, you know, something else I found interesting about this game in reading about its development was, you know, as we typically expect, and as you likely got from what we were just talking about in terms of the development of the sandbox environments and the sort of quote-unquote eccentric prototypes that they had come up with, is that they actually designed all of the worlds and challenges before theming them, rather than, I think, what you might see, particularly if you come from, like, a Western design approach, where you're coming up with the world and you're like, oh, I want to make a city. How do I do a city? In this case, you know, they design the world first. So you end up with something like the Food Kingdom or Lunch Kingdom.
Right.
Do you remember that one?
Yeah,
that is actually meant to be a new take on the lava level.
Oh, and yeah. Was designed as the little potabos.
And was designed as a lava level, but then in theming it to give it a fresh feeling, they themed it as, you know, this hot soup world where you're, you know, there's like food references everywhere and you're really after like a giant bowl of boiling stew. And I actually think that this effort to design basically the same but re-theme in a new way for the series did a lot to make that world feel fresh, even though I recognize that mechanically it's just an evolution of traditional lava world Mario design. I'd like to hear, Saigi, for you, was that an effective approach for them?
Oh yeah, and I mean, it just like I was saying, like, you know, in the Food Kingdom or the Luncheon Kingdom, you know, where you would take over the potabo, which you'd be used to seeing in, like, you know, like a dungeon level or something, you know, or like a underground fiery lava volcano, but that it was transposed, but that on top of that foundation, a cutesy, you know, cooking element was put on top of it, just made it that much more special. And I mean, like, I found myself in all of these roles being like, man, whether it's a new set of courses for tracks for Mario Kart 8 Deluxe or Mario Kart 9 or whatever, I'm really looking forward to, like, just some of the Odyssey worlds being Mario Kart tracks, or, you know, even like the basis for a Mario Party board or something, you know, like, or Smash stages.
Oh, dude, right?
Like, I found, like, it made the worlds really that much more immersive and, you know, not just kind of like, oh, it's just the same old thing.
Excellent, excellent. So, talking about the design and development of the game a little more, one of the big choices that was somewhat controversial in designing Mario Odyssey was that, you know, unlike prior 3D Mario games where after you collect the sort of MacGuffin of the world, typically you're sent back to the beginning of the level or back to the hub world. You know, you set your next task, your next goal. The Power Moons were designed to be found in continual exploration. The game would obviously have, you know, multiple collectibles in one smaller area. There wasn't like a specific focus on like what you had to do to progress. So the idea was really to get players to really be aware of the environment and actively searching for the secrets and surprises. I'd like to hear from you, Saigi. Did you feel like this was to the game's detriment or benefit, and why?
I mean, I think it was a benefit. I mean, when you think of, I've been comparing it to Mario 64, which of course was groundbreaking. You know, you would go in, get your star, and then you'd get out of the painting, and then you'd jump back in, and there's a new star to get. But I mean, like, you know, it might be a completely different part of that painting, you know, and it felt sometimes didn't always feel like even it was the same part of the, you know, a part of the same level in a way. So I think that this, it does feel different. And for me, I found it a lot more engaging instead of like, you know, as I said, getting this star in this painting is a pain in the butt. But, you know, then in Odyssey, you know, it's like, oh, well, I can kind of choose the types of challenges I want. If I really like trying to do the little mini games like jumping rope in New Donk City or, you know, the volleyball game in the little Beach Kingdom, like, you know.
Some of the races.
Yeah, that... like some of the races and stuff. You know, so if you, like, really were into that, you could pursue that. If you didn't want to deal with that, you could. I also appreciated the fact that you can get a moon just for going to the Crazy Cap Shop.
Yeah, and well, that was... So let's wrap up discussing the dev segment. I just want to talk a little bit more, and then we can talk about the caps, because I think the caps are something that a lot of people love about this game. I wanted to note that Miyamoto-san, the Mario series creator, was not involved in the game's day-to-day decision-making. He was only on this game as an executive producer, and so the development team just consulted with him when they actually had, like, questions about how to move forward. Miyamoto-san was, as is typical, very specific and critical, but unlike other Mario games where he has done consulting, he no longer gave ultimatums of,
no,
like, do this
table.
Or don't. Yeah, exactly. He actually worked to be more supportive and give more constructive criticism. And I wanted to ask you, do you feel like some of the game's experimentation might have its roots in that different approach? And again, do you feel like this bodes well for the future of 3D Mario game design?
I mean, yes and yes. I mean, no disrespect to Miyamoto-san, but I think that the series has only gotten stronger as he's kind of taken a more of a hands-off approach. And I mean, that's true for other things, like, you know, other franchises he's been involved in, and, you know, maybe kind of, I just think that, you know, just the overall Nintendo approach right now of kind of trying to, you know, train and, you know, empower this next generation of Nintendo designers and directors is putting out some of their best work yet. I mean, like, you know, we have the Splatoon team.
That's the Animal Crossing team as well.
Right, right. I mean, you know, so I think that if he had been a little more controlling, you know, maybe we wouldn't have seen some of the whimsy and, you know, some of the playfulness that ended up in the final game.
Excellent, excellent. So one of the things I liked a lot from a design standpoint here was that each of the kingdoms you go to, which is the name used for the various worlds in this game, have two sets of collectibles. There are, of course, the power moons, which are, you know, they fill the role of, like, shines or what have you from other 3D games. But you also have area-specific coins. And the area-specific coins, I guess, could be viewed as akin to, like, the dragon coins or red coins from earlier iterations.
Yeah,
blue
I just coins
call them
purple coins.
Fair. Blue coins purple. From Sunshine, of course. Purple coins in this game. And the purple coins can be used to buy new hats for Mario, or new costumes. And something that I think a lot of people had a lot of fun with, I certainly did, is that this game has a big focus on just, like, aesthetic dress-up with
right?
No gameplay impact. Well, I should say very minor gameplay
very
impact.
Minor.
There are some moons that you can only get if you're wearing the right clothes, although the game very clearly telegraphs what clothes you should be wearing.
Oh, someone...
And do allow some really fun experimentation. For example, there are instances where the game will ask you for, like, clothes that you can swim in. And a lot of people will assume, oh, you must have the Water World clothes. But if you go in Mario's boxers, they'll still let you in there, too.
That's cute.
So, yeah, it's actually, the game does allow a lot of leeway on those challenges and in a way that I thought is really fun and novel. I'd like to ask you, Slaggy, how you feel about that sort of game flow from, you know, the gameplay loop of collecting these region-specific purple coins, buying clothes with them, dressing up, and being able to customize the appearance of your Mario. How do you feel about it from a design perspective, and did the Mario dress-up appeal to you and it make you any more invested in your game?
I mean, I think it's just, you know, the additional level of collectibles, which is totally optional, really. You know, people who play these types of games love collectibles. I mean, you know, you look at, like, you know, Donkey Kong Country. I'm sorry, not Donkey Kong Country. Donkey Kong 64.
King of the Collectathons.
Yeah. Banjo-Kazooie, you know, so I mean, but I thought the purple coins were great. I always love playing dress up in games. If you give me costumes, I'm there pretty much. And so I loved, you know, being able to go off and look for purple coins, especially, you know, I didn't get every single costume, but, you know, I liked being able to run around in a world and, you know, feel like, oh, I'm, like, part of that theme. And, you know, I mean, Mario wearing, like, Tanuki suits or hammer suits, you know, which I'll also talk about in a different aspect, you know, but we always always think of, you know, Mario in kind of different outfits anyway. So, you know, I thought it kind of really tied into that idea. But, yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it a lot. And, you know, just the additional collectible element, you know, just was something else to really encourage exploration of the kingdoms and kind of seeing, you know, all the little hidden bits.
Well, and so I want to talk, again, from a design perspective, something that you just touched on. I want to ask, for those of you, of course, listening to this, haven't played the game, we have mentioned Mario's hat throwing. We've mentioned the mechanic of taking things over. The TLDR is that Mario can throw his hat at enemies in the game world. A lot of them, not all of them, but a surprisingly large number of them, take over the enemy and then have access to that enemy's moveset, attributes. It's used in really fun ways as almost like environmental puzzles in the Zelda mold.
Yeah, especially Majora's Mask.
So I actually found that to be a really compelling conceit to expand Mario's repertoire of abilities that way, rather than the traditional suits or costumes, which Slaggy just mentioned. So Slaggy, I'd like to hear from you. How did you feel about the choice to, first off, have such a strong focus on environmental puzzles, which I'm not sure was necessarily the biggest focus in Mario games prior to this? And how did you feel about compartmentalizing Mario's expanded suite of abilities by associating them with sort of the enemies in your area and your ability to capture them and use the abilities correctly?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a brilliant evolution of, like you said, I mean, going back to, you know, the Power Mushroom and the Leaf and, like, you know, all of the power-ups that we're used to. Tanuki suit, Hammer Brothers suit. I mean, you can't take over a Hammer Brothers, so it's basically like having a Hammer Brothers suit.
Right.
But no, I mean, I thought when we saw the first reveal of Odyssey and that mechanic, I was like, oh my god, it's brilliant. Like, this, you know, takes the idea of, you know, the different suits, but, like, really encouraging you to think about, okay, I'm gonna take over a Goomba, and, you know, so if I'm taking over a Goomba, I should probably be looking for other Goombas to jump on and make a Goomba stack, and there's probably gonna be some, like, tall area, you know, or, like, hard-to-reach areas that maybe, you know, maybe being tall enough, I can activate a switch, or maybe just being tall enough, there's a Power Moon that I can jump up and get. Or, for example, with the Cheep Cheeps, you know, taking over the Cheep Cheeps lets you go underwater without losing life after you run out of breath. So, like, you know, really opening that up, you know, and, you know, we had, like, the frog suit, but, I mean, the frog suit in Mario 3 really was, like, just, oh, you can swim faster and, like, kind of control yourself better, you know, so I think it really made it a lot more fun to figure out, like, okay, how am I going to use these abilities to interact with the world? Like, I actually love taking over the little tanks, and, like, you know, then you can, like, it basically changed it so, you know, that, like, you're doing a little shooty bits, you know?
Yeah, and I actually saw a lot of people very critical of a boss fight that utilizes that ability set.
Yeah,
I don't want to talk any further than to say that.
I was just going to say, Chrissy Teigen was having some difficulty with that. The model and self-professed game nerd.
Co-host of a Lip Sync Battle,
yeah,
I think it
yeah.
is. Yeah, but she's a delight. Her ranting about this game was adorable.
I was living for that.
But, you know, I also really enjoyed that particular power set, and I enjoyed that boss encounter, so
yeah, me
sorry.
Too. No, and I just, like, I think if, like, every time going into a new world and seeing, like, oh, how is this enemy gonna interact? Like, I loved, like, Wooden Kingdom was one of my favorite kingdoms, and I loved the little plant guy that you take over, and then, like, you know, he grows taller, and then, you know, can get, like, can kind of platform in that way. I just, every time I found a new enemy to take over, and then, you know, then of course you would see in later kingdoms, like, oh yeah, here's some more Cheep Cheeps, you've already had that element introduced. And then there were, like, you know, other things like the fire flowers, which, like, give you a little sprint, which I thought was a really interesting difference, you know, in terms of, you know, instead of just, you know, like, holding B to sprint or whatever, you know, like, that there were some areas that you needed to carefully use these fire flowers, or, I mean, I'm calling them fire flowers, but, you know, these flowers that, like, helps you move faster.
Yeah, so I just, I actually thought that tying the ability set to the areas and environments really did a really great job of communicating to the player what was expected to them. It was really reminiscent to me of, like, early NES level design of, like, the Mega Man games where, and I've talked about this, where if you're paying attention to the environment, the game tells you pretty clearly what it wants you to do. And I feel like Mario Odyssey is, like, like a master class on how to design a game that way.
And not only that, but I feel like every enemy that you could capture with Cappy, like, made the game feel, like it allowed the platforming to feel different, but still cohesive. Like, it never did not feel like a Mario platformer to me. But, you know, like, obviously flying a bullet bill through the air feels very different than using a little tank guy or kind of waddling as a little Goomba, you know?
But absolutely.
I found all of them really compelling.
Excellent. I would agree with that. I did feel, you know, like there was just a wider array of activities and actions to take compared to any other Mario game ever. And yet it all still, to me, felt like that same, like, super polished, super tight control that, for me, is such an appealing part of Mario gameplay and game
design.
And
the other thing is that, you know, by basing it on enemies, it's like, oh, if I accidentally, you know, let's say that, like, I got out of that enemy and then accidentally squished him or something, or I found, like, oh, I need another enemy. There's more part of that puzzle that I, like, didn't realize, and I left that enemy too quick and then squished him and got a coin out of it. By not tying it to a power-up, where, you know, like, if...
Oh, I got hit, now I can't take this route.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even going back to, like, Mario... I mean, I'm thinking, like, Mario 3, like, oh, if you don't have the raccoon tail, you can't fly up and find, you know, lots of different bits in those levels. So I think it just allowed you to, you know, like, again, kind of like, not that it made it easier, but, you know, kind of a little more forgiving in that way.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I'm gonna cut you off here. I want to talk a little bit about the story. Mario Odyssey has gotten a little bit of criticism for its story. The game basically focuses on Bowser kidnapping Princess Peach to force her into marriage. Bowser has the help of a group of anthropomorphic rabbits known as the Broodles. Basically, Mario gets a magical hat, the spirit of a magical hat that inhabits the shreds of his signature cap, I guess you could say. That is Cappy. Bowser has kidnapped his sister Tiara to use in Peach's wedding tiara. And basically, you're chasing Bowser across the world in your Odyssey as, you know, he's trying to... I actually hadn't said... I meant Odyssey as in a grand adventure.
Oh, well, yeah, but...
But yes, the spaceship that they use to follow him is called the Odyssey. That is also true.
I guess it's more of an airship, really.
It flies to the moon at one point.
Spoilers!
Yeah, well...
Although the lyrics
this.
Of Jump Up Superstar, like, says all the way to the moon, right? So.
Yeah, right? But basically, you know, the game does subvert expectation a little bit in its ending, which is very nice.
I was gagged.
But for the most part, you know, it's the typical damsel in distress, Bowser and Mario fighting over a woman kind of stuff. I thought it was actually really well told. I thought it was very cute. I did not think that it was regressive storytelling. I wouldn't knock the game for it. But I did want to give you the opportunity, Slaggy. How did you feel about the story?
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's something that we need to be thoughtful of as content... Well, I mean, not that we are necessarily making games, but that content creators need to be thoughtful of, and, you know, I don't think that it hurt the game. I don't think that it was portraying anything negative, but, I mean, you know, it would have been interesting to see, you know, how could this story have been told without relying on the wedding theme. But then, you know, I thought the Broodles were really cute. I liked the little mini-boss Broodle fights.
Now, that might be something where we diverge. I did not, for the most part, care for the Broodle fights.
I mean, I thought they were really simple, but, you know, it kind of gave you a chance to, you know, explore some, or, you know, there were other, like, little mini-bosses as well, like, you know, some within the stages. Or I guess those would have been more main bosses, I guess, huh? But, you know, I thought that it was cute. Like, you know, like, I thought of it like Boom Boom from Mario 3. Like, you know, just like a little...
So, actually, and I think that this is where we diverge, because I hate Boomer or Boom Boom. I don't like those fights. I think they're so boring and tedious. I hate them.
You didn't even like the Broodles fight on the Bowser's Castle level?
I mean, I thought it was aight. I would have been more interested in there being more mechanics. But I did think that one was at least very cute in its concept and design.
I have to say, I thought the Bowser fights were a lot easier than I expected to be.
I liked them. That last one, for me, was actually really hard. I died so many times, but I also refused to go into that fight with, like, the 6 health point cap.
Oh, see, yeah. So you can get a little, one of the little guys from the Toast Arena, which is the kind of the little desert kingdom that's done in kind of have a Dia de los Muertos theming, he'll end up popping up in different places and say, oh, do you want to buy an extra heart? And so, like, yeah, that definitely, and that's, again, another kind of sort of variable difficulty thing. Like, that's, I needed to get through that. That's the only way I was able to get through that fight was.
Yeah, see, I treated that like the P-Wing in the 3D Land game, where it's like, oh, this is your freebie if you can't beat the game on your own. And so for me, I just did not select it. Because, again, for me, that's just not how I choose to play the game. I don't think it speaks any less of you if you did or did not. Like, just for me, that's not the route I'd take. And that actually does speak to, like we said, the variable difficulty, where really you as a player can navigate and negotiate your own desired challenge level in this game, which I really appreciated.
But I guess I kind of got off track, and you were asking about the story. I think more than the wedding story, I really liked the seeing the inhabitants of each kingdom and kind of like the little story within each kingdom. Like, you know, there was the one where you had to, you know, in each way you're kind of like helping the kingdom. Like, the desert has this like chill in it and everyone's freezing. Or, you know, the little beach kingdom had this octopus terrorizing everyone, and you had to restore like the champagne glass thing or whatever. Like, I really liked the little stories within each kingdom and like helping them restore peace to their kingdom.
Excellent. Yeah, I would overall agree. I really liked the individual kingdom storylines. I always was actually kind of interested in how they were going to progress. And that, I will say, actually felt was a major success for the game. I'll also note that the larger Peach story continues in the post game a little bit, and I really appreciated that as well. I do think that we could use a Mario game where Princess Peach isn't kidnapped, and maybe Mario and Bowser fight over something other than you know, a woman's personhood. I will note, you know, I've heard people say that as this game is designed for an all ages audience, like, they don't need to be forward thinking. I disagree with that. I think it can always be helpful to be forward thinking and breaking away from tired tropes, but I don't think it reflects poorly on the game that they didn't. For me, it would have been an additional plus had they had gotten away from that.
Right. Conversely, I agree with you, but I also think that an all-ages platform makes it even more important to be able to tell stories without...
Oh, I agree. I do agree with that, while at the same time acknowledging that, you know, this is not... A Mario game is fundamentally not going to be the biggest impact with that kind of a choice. I think that Zelda would have, for example, had a much greater impact if, for example, there had been an inversion of the trope there. If I think that's a game where it would have had a bigger impact.
I mean, I feel like Breath of the
impact.
Wild kind of did.
I mean,
well, in that
it
respect.
Kind of tried, but at the end of the day, you're still dealing with Zelda is pushed off to the side for 500 years to hold back Ganon. I appreciate that, you know, she
is captured,
represented as a very strong woman who was the one suppressing Ganon.
But we don't want to play as Zelda.
But she was still pushed off the board for the majority of the game.
Yeah.
So, you know, and here too, I think I would have just liked to have seen them utilize the strong female characters in the Mario setting differently than just LOL kidnapped again.
Although I do have to say, I think a lot of people, myself included, loved Pauline in this. And, you know, we've seen Pauline start to resurface. She was kind of in those March of the Minis sorts of games.
Well, yeah, because those are the spiritual successors of classic Donkey Kong, yeah.
And you know, I understand that New Donk City was designed to be like the Donkey Kong, like where Donkey Kong took place or whatever. But you know, I love Pauline in this, and I hope that means more Pauline.
Excellent. All right, well, let's wrap this up. I just want to hear your overall thoughts on Mario Odyssey. I'd like to know what your thoughts are on the game itself, how you would fit it into the larger Mario canon, and if people are a Mario fan, to what degree should they be prioritizing playing this game if they haven't yet?
I had a wonderful time with it. It was probably my most enjoyable Mario 3D platforming experience. Not that I don't like the other 3D platformer games, but I found the freedom really freeing, for lack of a better word. And I think that it was the step, like, it was, I had no idea how they were going to take a step forward from Galaxy, which really pushed the boundary in terms of, like, you know, level design and stuff. But somehow they did it while still keeping it kind of, like, grounded in reality. in a reality, in a Mario reality, so to speak. So I loved it. And like I said, I think it's probably my favorite of, I think it's probably the strongest, at least from what I played so far, of all of the 3D platformers to date. And I think that even if people have not had a lot of success or necessarily enjoyed the other Mario platformers in the past, I think there's still a lot to offer here. So, you know, highly recommended.
Excellent. I would agree with you that it is a progression in design and concept from Mario Galaxy. I think that's something that a lot of us had no idea how Nintendo could possibly pull off. I think they did here. I think they pulled it off with flying colors. And now I want to know, like, what's next? That having been said, I will note I am of among the people who feel like the vast majority of the game is a little too easy for me. And so as a result, for me, I would probably say that I prefer Sunshine and Galaxy 2 to Odyssey a little bit. I will say I think Mario Sunshine is woefully underrated. I've talked about this here before.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
As a very small note, I don't see the way that the flood device in Sunshine changes Mario's abilities in such a fundamentally different way than the various transformations in Mario Odyssey. It just contextualizes them a little differently.
I love that the little squid guy was basically like you having a flood.
Yeah, it just contextualizes them a little bit differently, in my opinion. And I still don't understand the negativity that Sunshine gets. I thought that it was the perfect balance between being a really difficult platformer that set like really clear challenges for you, but also challenged you to find ways to complete them, which is a lot of what I love about Odyssey as well. Galaxy 2 remains, I think, one of the pinnacles in 3D game design altogether, particularly platformers. Odyssey does bring to the table, though, just the complete non-linearity, which I really appreciate. The huge focus on exploring for yourself and at your own pace, and being able to, for the most part, find all of the secrets in an area the first time you're there. Obviously, some stuff does unlock in the post-game. I don't want to spoil too much, but every world gets a ton of new content. But you can do so much your first time there to every world. And I do like that from a design perspective a lot. Overall, to me, if you're a fan of 3D Mario, I would describe this as an absolute must-play. I think that for most people who don't think it's the best 3D Mario, I think it's only those of us who are like such devotees is that we almost require more than was possible to provide in one game. Very recommended. I literally, the only negative I have to say about this game is I found some of the mini boss fights a little tedious.
Mm.
And that's more about me, again, than it is about the actual game design.
That's fair.
So all of that having been said, let's start winding down by talking about what's up.
I said, hey, what's going on?
I have been playing Puzzle Fighter on my iPhone 10. It has been a lot of fun just checking out Puzzle Fighter, getting to return to it. It is a very loot box focused game, but at least the game is very forgiving in terms of like letting you earn like up to 8 loot boxes every 8 hours just by winning matches. Like, it's not even that hard to get them. So that, for me at least, is very forgiving. I have not bought any loot boxes because of my recent resolve not to support those kinds of practices, but overall I actually think it's a very competent and well done Puzzle Fighter implementation, despite having some pretty poor graphics for the selectable characters. I've also been continuing to put in my Dead by Daylight hours, a few hours a week at least. That's been a lot of fun. I've been checking out my Xbox One X, mostly just playing 360 games on it, checking out like how pretty Mirror's Edge is on that thing. I have bought a few Xbox One games over the Black Friday sales, so I expect I will have a lot more impressions on Xbox games next episode. Slaggy, what about you? What have you been playing?
Most of my focus has been Pokemon Ultra Sun, having a good time with it.
I've been playing Ultra Moon also. Continue.
Yeah, we'll talk more about it on an upcoming Stabcast, I'm certain, but basically I would describe it as a director's cut, and I think story-wise, actually a big improvement over the original Sun Moon. Once you start to get into the nitty-gritty. Other than that, not too much. I really, like I said, I've been putting most of my time into Ultra Sun. We played some Hasbro Game Night stuff that you downloaded, so Monopoly and Trivial Pursuit, so that was fun.
Trivial Pursuit Live.
Trivial Pursuit Live. So, yeah, definitely looking forward to, you know, some of the releases coming up, like Xenoblade and stuff. So, but yeah, Pokemon kind of just took over my, you know, holiday week of playing because just really getting into it.
Excellent.
All right, that being said, it's time to wrap this up. So we appreciate your feedback, your iTunes subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. We like your Facebook likes. We effing love Twitter. And you can check us out at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And you can mail us at MailBuoy@GameBuoy.org.
MailBuoy@GameBuoy.org.
Oh, but first, I'm jumping the gun a bit here. We like those. We like that feedback, and we do have a few tweets to catch up on. We have a shout-out from Soundscape419, who is reaching out to one of the hosts of Nintendo Pulse, which I had not been aware of, but now I definitely want to check out because I am obviously a Nintendo fan, saying that they should do a collab with us because your show and theirs are two of my favorites. Aw, thank you, Soundscape.
Thank you.
And thanks for the recommendation. We'll definitely check out Nintendo Pulse. We have a tweet from Remy LeBeau, better known as Anthony from the Nintendo Love Fest podcast and the sister shows. It says, great to have you in Slack. Kick back on the good ship emoji. GameBuoy.org, Spike Point, you were missed.
Aw, thank you. Y'all were missed too.
Your enzyme saying, as per our latest episode, it's not on Google Play Music yet. And then following up more recently with, it's still not on Google Play. I apologize that I don't know what would be causing that glitch in the system. But I will definitely look into that. And thank you. Always let us know if you're having difficulty accessing us on one of the other services. Hopefully, still able to enjoy us over on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Not. But we will definitely look into that, and I will update y'all with the progress on that. Hopefully,
hey, look at it this way, Your Enzyme. You're going to have two episodes to listen to now.
Yeah. Well, anyways.
We also had Gym Leader Derek, who tweeted at us, hashtag HufflepuffPride.
Oh, you're right.
How dare you? That was at you, Slidekick, for skipping over that comment. Yes. He was supporting you.
No, I thank you for mentioning that one, because I just...
And thank him for his support.
Yes, hashtag Hufflepuff Pride hearts. All right, these shoutouts.
You threw that one at me quick, you jerk.
Hey, I'm hungry, sorry.
So I, of course, want to point you in the direction of the Voice of Geeks Network over at VogNetwork.com. We stream over there. It's pretty rad. You can also hear some shows like Girls Gone Wow, where you can get a female's perspective on the world's most popular MMO. Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice and from whom we steal so many of our cues. The Ranger Pridecast, where myself and Shane Alenko talk about the current season of the Power Rangers metaseries and the current season of the Super Sentai metaseries, upon which it's based out of Japan. Due to my recent health issues and Shane's now happening vacation, that show does not have new content at the moment, but it will soon. I cannot wait for y'all to hear what I think about Q-Ranger. You should also check out the Starboard Power Coupling podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail. In terms of shows that aren't on VOC, but which still deserve your attention, you should check out the Nintendo Love Fest, which does exactly what it says on the tin, and X-Nation, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants. I'd be remiss not to mention the Astral Era podcast. Astral Era is a Final Fantasy XIV podcast focused on in-depth discussion of new content, new game mechanics, story/lore, music, and of course, glamour, darling. And last, also probably least, is Slagkick's show Reading is Fundamental, where he, myself, Rob Roberts, Morn John Tradio, and Delvin from VG Realness talk about the current season of RuPaul's Drag Race.
I feel very attacked right now!
Yeah, you always do. Slaggy, why don't you take us a place?
I'm going to take you to a game bar. Game bar is the gay video game prairie-home companion. I almost said gay video gay, but yeah, same thing. Gay video game prairie-home companion and a part of the Hunty Bunch, which is what we like to call our Sisters Who podcast. That includes VG Realness, serving up a dose of gaming chit-chat among friends. They do some YouTube content as well. I'd like to shout out to the Magical Boys podcast, a pop culture podcast from a queer perspective, formerly known as the Joystick Jockeys, now talking about all things queer and pop culture. I also like to shout out to our allies over at the Nintendo Phone Club, your place for platformers, positivity, and pop punk. I'd like to shout out to our sister shows as well. Anime Buoy is your port of call for anime recommendations, news bits, and discussions that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. And Stabcast is your twice-monthly look at the deeper worlds of Pokemon. That's the same type attack bonus podcast. over at Stabcast.org that we do with Trainer Sulker.
Stabcast.org.
Stabcast.org and AnimeBooey.org. Our wonderful theme music was done by the late, great Zelda Reorchestrated, which is the project that aims to reorchestrate beautiful Zelda music into gorgeous symphonic sound. They unfortunately closed their doors permanently quite a while back, but we will forever pour out a 40 into the Great Fairy Fountain.
All right. Well, with all that having been said, thank you so much for spending this lovely, sunny Sunday afternoon with
Wait, it's pouring rain out there.
That's the joke. We will be back at you in just another week or two with another episode of the GameBooey.org video game podcast.
GameBooey.org video game podcast.
But thank you so much for your time. It means the world to us. Until then, though, keep gaming.
Keep gaming.
Keep thinking.
Keep thinking.
And, Sekai Terasu, Superstar, Soul, let's do the Odyssey.
Let's do the Odyssey. Dun, 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 dun.
Are hot.
Hot mics, get your hot mics here.